to it now. Juan Arango will be joining us later on to talk all things Conan Ball and the South American World Cup qualification. But this talk of England and a reinvestment in coaches here in this country has got us thinking here at World Football Daily. And we're thinking, is this the right way to go, to just throw more coaches into it? Should we not be trying to change it? And if we are going to throw in more coaches, how are we going to advertise and how are we going to encourage people to get involved in coaching football here in the UK? And I'm delighted to say today I'm being joined by a man who might have a few insights into this and how to basically bring the joy back to English national team football. He is a very, very highly regarded man here in England in terms of footballing stature. He is a PFA delegate. He also is an Arsenal, former Arsenal player, league winner, 400 appearances plus for the Gunners. Joining me on World Football Daily today, Mr. Paul Davis of the PFA. Paul, really appreciate you having a chat with us today. Ex-Arsenal legend and now, of course, very prominent member of the PFA. Paul, you're heavily involved in the coaching aspect of the PFA. Can you just describe to us first exactly what your role entails with the organisation?
Yeah, my role is I'm a coach educator for the PFA, and essentially what I do, there's actually 12 of us around the country, and we work solely for current and former players who want to get themselves educated and get onto the coaching ladder. So essentially we speak to players, take questions, receive phone calls, emails from players who want to take either their level 2, their level 3, level 4 or pro license, and just talk them through the process really. And also we run the courses, we run level 2, and we run level 3. Level 4s, we don't run. The FA run those, and the FA run the level 5, which is a pro license. So essentially, we do a lot of work with the FA. We are essentially running their courses for our members, who are the PFA players. So, yeah, that's essentially what we do. It's, you know, we've got a lot of, obviously a lot of players want to stay in the game and want to contribute back into it when they finish playing. Most players want to stay in the game as either manager, coaches, you know, assistants, whatever. But they need to get themselves qualified, and essentially we take them through that.
Now, Paul, the FA and David Gill, especially this week, has discussed that there's a need for more coaches in England. As you, in your role in the PFA, are you finding that there are more ex-players wanting to stay in the game? Or are you finding that there actually are, maybe is a kind of diminishing role as ex-players get attracted to getting involved in the media and other aspects outside of football?
Yeah, there is... The media aspect has definitely been a big attraction for players coming out of the game. Obviously now, with so much outlet, so many different outlets interested in football and needing experts or former players to give their expertise. And, you know, a lot of players are deciding that, you know, it is a good way of continuing their involvement in football and sharing their knowledge and expertise by doing, being an analyst on TV or radio or writing for papers and magazines. So a lot of players are taking that option. There are more opportunities. However, you know, there are still players, many, many players who feel that football is what, you know, is what they really want to be involved in, the actual out there on the pitch, training, coaching, managing players, and feel that they've got something to offer, want to stay in the game and be in the limelight, I suppose. I suppose that's part of why a lot of players perhaps want to stay in it. It's what they've known all their lives, and they've got a lot to offer. Challenges of, you know, I've been a footballer, can I now be a coach, good coach, can I now be a good manager? Yeah, many, many players get torn. I think once you finish playing, I personally, I was pretty clear that I wanted to stay in as a coach, manager, a strong manager. I think some players are not quite as clear. They're not sure whether it's for them. They perhaps, you know, sort of dip their foot in water to see whether, you know, it's something that they're really interested in doing. And some feel that it's not what they want. Some carry on and then, you know, try and develop a career in coaching. But it's like, you know, I say to all our candidates, all our coaches that come on, it is really like learning a profession in that you're now becoming a teacher of the game, whereas before you were the student. Now you have to learn how to teach people how to play, how to develop their games, which is, you know, different skill sets needed, different skill tools needed for that. Some players can, it's like going back to school almost, and most of players find that a little bit frightening because it's a long time since they've been in the classroom. So it's getting over that hurdle, because a lot of the courses are, you know, there's some theory stuff to do. It's not just all outside practical stuff. There's quite a bit of sort of ways that you have to learn about how people learn and how people, young people think. So it is a challenge that those players, you know, I feel do want to take on board.
There's obviously been, as I say, this discussion about increasing the number of people getting into coaching in general in the UK. The PFA specifically, Paul, what are you guys doing to try and encourage players to get more involved and get into the classroom, to get over that fear? How is the PFA doing this? And what is there anything more that the PFA could be doing as well?
Well, I suppose, yeah, there's always more you can do. You always feel that, you know, there's more to do. Essentially, what we do in the department, the coaching department of the PFA, as I said, there's 11 of us around the country, scattered around the country, and perhaps we could do with more because the work, you know, there are enough sort of clients that want, you know, former players and current players want to get on courses. The problem that we kind of have trying to run the courses is that if players are still playing, you know, they're still trying to get into first teams and trying to, you know, get contracts, etc. And it's such a competitive industry that, you know, they have to focus on their football first and foremost, and they can't really, it's very difficult for them to take their eye off of that when they're actually in the sort of heat of the battle. We need, you know, professional contracts, trying to get a contract, to actually pull away from that and take a coaching course can be a little bit risky. So you kind of they got to think about the balance and also the time and the rest that they need. So some managers won't particularly like players going away and taking coaching courses during season or during busy parts of the season, because, you know, obviously a manager wants the players rested up, doesn't want them out on their feet standing up doing running around doing coaching courses. So there's that challenge for the players. And you know, we try to run the courses. So we don't want to upset managers and clubs, so we try and run the courses at times that are convenient for the clubs and also for the players.
Paul, there's also, though, the discussion of you can add the more coaches, that's fine, but really it's what we're coaching them and how we're approaching that coaching role. There was a mass overhaul of this in Belgium from the grassroots level upwards. What's needed more? Should England in general, should we be looking at getting more coaches involved, or should we be really reassessing exactly our whole approach to the game in general and how we teach it, rather than who's teaching it and how many are teaching it?
I think that's a really good point. And to be fair to the English FA, I do believe they have really looked into it over the last 5-10 years. I feel that the FA have really pumped some money into FA Learning, which is that arm of the FA that looks at all this. And there is a lot of work that they've done to develop and the type of courses that they put on. And, you know, I've, over my time in coaching, I've seen a big improvement in the way that the courses are delivered and what's expected of the coaches. And there's some really good material out there. So I think the courses have improved tremendously, and they do encourage good coaching or good coaches. I think what has happened is that other countries have been doing this for a long, long time before us. We've, like I say, it's only the last 10 years that the English FA have really put some resources behind us. You know, Germany, all the other, France, Spain, they've been doing it a lot longer. They've put a lot more resources in, and you know, we've been a little way behind. We're trying to catch up, but we are making grounds as far as I see from that point of view. The thing with it's a big area, because it's not just about coach development, it's not just about the courses, although that is a big part of it. I feel it's also about opportunities, and also about experiences and rewards. So, you know, I feel part of the problem here in this country is that young academy, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, coaches of that age are not particularly well rewarded for what they do. So, sort of financially rewarded. So, in this country, so there's not a great value put on that sort of age group of coach, which is one of the most important age groups. So, you know, people that are good are not being sort of hang around too much if they're not being rewarded for it. And I think that's a major problem. There's quite a few areas I feel personally that need to be looked at. So you get what you pay for, essentially.
But it's,
and I feel that's part of the problem at the younger age groups. It's a big area, and it's be very difficult to try and summarise it all in a few minutes. But just trying to pick off a couple of areas that I feel personally that needs to be looked at. And that would be one of them, you know, what people get paid for and for what the value of the work they do. And when you can consider that the amount of money in football, that the sort of payment for some of the most important people in football is not what it should be, then I think it really does need to be looked at. Well, it's a massive area.
I was going to say, Paul, there is a huge amount of money in modern football these days. Has it become a case that that money is too separate in that, because the Premier League is almost like it is its own board, its own business, away, so far separated from the FA and from those kind of coaching schemes that actually the amount of money that's going into the Premier League elsewhere in terms of football, we're not reaping the benefits at all?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, youth football should really be getting a lot more money than it does, because that's where it all begins. And it's not. For youth football doesn't get the money that should be ploughed into it. I know the Premier League now have got the EPPP, which is just up and running this year, and they've, you know, the Premier League have put in a lot of money into that. Something like 300 odd million over the next 4 years. I think that's the sort of figures they've been putting in. But that's only just started up this year. So that's going to take a little time to set in. But even then, there's one or two flaws in there, in that, you know, the coaches in that EPPP that I just mentioned are not particularly paid that well. So, you know, they've tried to invest some money into it. I think it needs continued re-evaluation, and just continue to look at how we can improve how we develop our young players. Because if we don't do that, we're going to continue to have poor results at international level as they go through the age groups.
And just
if when players are young, they don't have the right. I say young, I mean sort of even at 8, 9, 10 years of age, the the right school teachers looking after them. Because I remember when I was growing up as a kid, I had sports teachers who knew their sport, knew football, who understood the game and was able to lead me in the right direction and tell me what to do, advise me. The situation now in schools is that there isn't anybody that is qualified in general. There isn't no sports teachers, PE teachers, and there's no curriculum for sport, generally speaking. So kids lose that valuable information at that age. So there's a lot of areas I feel that needs to be addressed for the whole picture to get better. It's not just the Premier League taking all the money. It's not, not applying enough money in. There's a lot of areas that need to come together. So it's a big, big job. But I think things are on the way regarding the courses that we do, that the FA have put in place, and they've got St. George's Park. And there's a real commitment to developing coaches. So that's sort of going in the right direction. It's one or two of the other areas that I still feel needs to be looked at and revalued.
And just finally, Paul, very briefly, I've taken up plenty of your time and I will let you get out after this one. Do you think, I mean, you're an Arsenal legend, over 400 appearances for the club, represented England at under-21 level as well. Do you think, though, if you as an English footballer were put in this modern day game, you would have the same opportunities and chances that you'd had back in the late 70s when your career kind of really started to get going at Arsenal? Do you think it would be the same opportunities because of this whole instant gratification and how the ease of kind of bringing in foreign players and whatnot?
Without, I wouldn't have had the opportunity. I'm pretty sure that if I was 17, I broke into Arsenal's first team at 17. If I was 17 today, I wouldn't be breaking into Arsenal's first team. I'm pretty certain of that. It's the opportunities for the youngsters to break into the teams now is just, as all the figures over the last few years have been showing us, that the opportunities for the young players are not there. The competition from abroad is a lot stronger. So without a doubt, I mean, I broke in to Arsenal's first team at 17, and I could see even from the age of 15, 14, that there was an opportunity if I played well, if I developed my game, if I worked hard, that I could see a pathway through into the Arsenal first team. But I honestly don't feel that I would be able to do that now. I mean, Jack Wiltshire has done exceptionally well to break through. He's an exceptional talent for his age, and he's managed to do that. And you get that. You get the one or two. You get the Wayne Rooney's, and to establish yourself in one of the team, major teams now, is you have to be that type of player, which it does make it very, very difficult. And there's so many players that just don't get the opportunity to, and that's the only way you're going to improve and get better, is just by playing and playing at a good standard. And if you're good enough and take your opportunity, then you'll break through. But no, to answer the question, it's definitely harder.
Paul, I really appreciate you taking the time out. I know you're a very busy man indeed, and it's fantastic to A, have you on World Football Daily, and B, get an opportunity to talk to somebody A, who's working at the PFA, and also, as I say, an Arsenal legend as well, mate. We really appreciate you taking the time, man, and we look forward to catching up with you at some point in the not too distant future, man.
Okay, cheers, Ollie. All the best.
Thank you very much, Paul. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Bye.
Bye now. Paul Davis there of the PFA joining us here on World Football Daily. Over 400 appearances for Arsenal. An integral part has been described of that late 80s Arsenal side. Won the League Cup in the First Division in 89 and 91. Paul Davis joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about coaching in England, things that maybe needed to be changed. There's, according to him, plenty that needs to be changed indeed in terms of the game here in the UK. And amazing to think that somebody who played so for so long in that Arsenal side and was such a big part of it. Now Wood doesn't see him, if he was in the modern day game, being able to play and get the opportunities that he had back then. England take on Moldova tonight, but there's plenty of questions still off the pitch regarding English football to get into. There's also plenty of questions regarding football from all around the world, and I'm delighted to be joined by our guest for today. He is a man who knows all things about global football, and really we are honoured to get him on our show every week, or on our site every week, with Mad About Football Boys. It's Mr. Juan Arango joining me here on World Football Daily to talk all things South American World Cup qualifiers today. Juan, does your football knowledge know no bounds? I mean, we can talk to you about European, now we're going to talk to you about South American, we've done Central American with you as well. Where does the knowledge stop? I mean, Antarctica, what are we talking here?
I can tell you right now that Sunshine Stars over in Nigeria, looking at Rodolfo Zapata to return as their coach. He was the one that led them to the African Champions League a couple of years ago. Actually was a candidate being the man in charge of the Super Eagles. So I guess I could say something.
If we need to cover a bit of African club football as well, we will definitely be giving a call up in the next few.
No, I'm just showing off right now. If you ever needed to, yeah, I'd give it a shot. Why not?
But mate, it's all about broadening horizons here on World Football Daily. If it wasn't,
are you already with your Rosetta Stone or Pinsir Spanish?
Oh, I'm gonna be learning some Spanish. Hopefully, I've got some friends from Peru as well, so I'll be learning some Spanish and hopefully be able to divert my ways into the South American world of football, which will be very cool indeed. We do need to talk about South American. Juan, World Cup qualifiers coming up this weekend. We're getting to the business end of the South American World Cup qualification process. First and foremost, Argentina guaranteed at least a playoff spot at minimum right now, but. Are they going to book their place in the finals proper now?
They should. I mean, they have a bye on during this round, so they're going to be relaxing and waiting to see how everything plays out. But they're very poised to be able to get at least a point out of Paraguay, because Paraguay right now find themselves in a very precarious situation. Minnesota is making it really big as far as Paraguay's World Cup hopes. Right now, they find themselves in a very positive situation because they're going to be facing Bolivia, a team that hasn't won in World Cup qualifying play in over 20 years on the road. So you do have that precedent. Of course, Bolivia not being as strong outside of La Paz as they are when they are in La Paz, that's going to be a major factor too. Of course, Victor Hen is the coach of Paraguay, being very confident. He was talking a great deal, especially at the press conference the other day, talking about how his team looked, how his team started to gel finally. took about 2 years to gel and three coaches in the process. But I guess it started to happen. Very confident, especially after the 3-3 result against Germany. And essentially, he's going to be using that same team. That's pretty much what's been speculated within the Paraguayan press, also by their Bolivian counterparts as well. Paraguay, we're going to see what happens. I mean, you do have a team that collectively have been struggling. Individually, their team has been struggling. And you have some players such as Jonathan Fabra, who's really had some time, of course, struggling with everything except his love life. Right now, he's one of the players that has been rather disappointing for that club. And you have to understand that this is the reason, the lack of continuity, the lack of development that Paraguay has had throughout the past couple of years. That generation from 2004 that won the silver medal in the Olympics in Athens, they came and they went. And there really hasn't been a replacement to be able to make this squad rejuvenate and become a little bit more, a little bit fresher, give some alternatives for coaches that have been there already. And that's been the main problem. Same thing with Bolivia. They're going to have 8 players that they're not going to be playing in order to be playing against them, in order to have these players available against Ecuador. The issue, of course, all of those players, including Marcelo Moreno Martins, Alejandro Chumacero, and Conejo Arce, all those 3 players, they're probably not going to be there against Paraguay because of yellow card. They don't want to lose the opportunity to earn points. So they'd rather sacrifice and try to earn 1 on the road than sacrifice losing 3 at home against Ecuador in a high-altitude matchup.
But with Paraguay, I mean, obviously this weekend, as you say, they take on Bolivia at home. Is there any belief at all with either of these two sides that they can actually make the playoffs? So I know Uruguay have been on this massive slump in World Cup qualification at the moment. Venezuela and Peru have been iffy, to say the least, in terms of form and regular results. Do both these two sides genuinely feel, though, so way off the pace that there is still a glimmer of hope to make the World Cup, or are they just playing for pride now?
Bolivia pretty much right now is playing for 2018. They're looking at ready. The team overall has seen that, of course, now teams are getting more accustomed to them. Teams have been able to get points off them at home. And, of course, they haven't been able to earn many points on the road. That's been one of the major issues. But also the lack of effort that they've – not effort, but the lack of opportunity that they've been able to develop on the opposing goal. That's been one of the major issues with them as well. Coach Javier Azcaragorta has been talking about that. He's been looking to see what this squad can do. He knows that he does have the players. Of course, there's always that ghost of 1994, having those players like Marco Cheverri, Marco Sandi, having Valdivieso, Truco, all those guys that got Bolivia to their first and only World Cup. They're always being held to that standard, obviously, but these players don't have that. And there's really also an issue going on as far as player development there as well. You don't see players, of course, you see occasionally the Marcelo Moreno Martins. Right now, their best player could possibly be Alejandro Chumacero, the player that's currently with Sport Recife in Brazil, was previously with the Strongest. So when you start looking at what he has to play with, really, it's the thinnest of all squads in South America. That's been the major issue with Bolivian football for at least the past decade.
And for Paraguay, though, you mentioned kind of this lack of harmony in the side. Is there any kind of glimmer of hope for their future, do you think, Juan, or is this going to be a side that's going to continue to struggle in Conmebol?
Well, there's a need for changes, and I think many solid changes. One of them that's been obviously screaming for it in the past few years was the former goalkeeper. And there was a bit of harmony reached when Tata Martino was there. He did have the players. He's been the type of coach, and many starting to see it. He's the type of coach that does what he can with what he has. And, with Paraguay, he was able to, show a team that was very good at marking, very good in the air traditionally, a team that was able to run around and give a hard time and neutralize, and also with players such as Roque Santa Cruz, up top, to be able to have those, and at one point, of course, Salvador Cabanas, too, to be able to make a difference. A guy to be looking at that I really would like to see with the Paraguayan national team is Wilson Pitoni, the man from Olimpia. That's a player that we saw in the first leg of the Copa Libre, scoring that phenomenal free kick against Atlético Mineiro, and really would want to see how he's going to be in the mix with the Paraguayan national team. But overall, right now, they're looking at 2018 as well. There has to be some major collapses because there's way too many teams in that middle pack that are either just looking to gain points or looking to just get an outright spot. Right now, you could technically say that South America, there's about, you could say, four or five teams fighting for the last two playoff spots.
There is, as you say, that immense middle pack, and let's move straight into the middle of that pack. Uruguay, hit and miss, Juan, in terms of this World Cup qualification process. They have looked at points absolutely incredible going forward, and the amount of firepower in their lineup, there's no surprise, especially that 4-0 win against Chile. On the other hand, though, there's been this crisis, this massive drop-off in form at points. Uruguay, we're going into a crucial point now of World Cup qualification. Have they got enough to turn it around mentally?
Oh, yeah, they do. I mean, look, for those of you that aren't familiar with the Uruguayan national team, Uruguay doesn't know how to do things easy. They always find the most complicated route. They'll go around the town that's across the street. I mean, that's pretty much how they do it. It's just, you talk to the Uruguayan press and they say the same thing. It's never a team that can sail into a World Cup or cruise without a single hitch. It's just not them.
or at least this generation of players, and if you want to go even further, the past few generations as well. Uruguay, yeah, of course, they looked good in matches against the 4-1 you mentioned against Chile. Also, the 1-0 that they were able to earn in Venezuela against La Vinotinto in a very, very happy human Puerto Ordaz. That's something that really tells you that this team, when they have to get it together, they have to get it together, and they do. And, you know, you start seeing, okay, yeah, Luis Suarez, how is he going to be coming in with barely any action? Obviously, he's not playing at Liverpool. Edinson Cavani, okay, how is he going to be doing after his move to PSG? Okay, Diego Forlan is 34 years old. You know, who's going to be stepping up? The back line, that's a huge question mark thing. Diego Lugano being a starter as well. I mean, what's going to happen? Of course, there's always a light at the end of the Uruguayan tunnel, especially when you start looking at players like Jose Maria Jimenez, the under-20 player who's part of this squad now. He's now starting to look and be poised to earn a spot as the left back of the future for Uruguay. So now you start looking at players like Coates, like Rolin, and like Jimenez, and you have a pretty much a back line that's starting to shape itself, at least into, you know, looking at maybe the Olympics in 2016 and the World Cup in 2018. That starts looking at your back line. Yeah, there's still a lot of hope. You do have players like Diego Laxalt, Jordi Andarrascaeta. You have these youngsters that are up and coming, and yeah, now you're starting to see some of these senior side players feel that there's pressure, and the fringe players such as a Lodeiro, such as an Abel Hernandez, starting to feel some pressure from players below, saying, hey, you know what, if you're not stepping up, we're going to come and take your place. So you start to see a little bit of competition from that end, while there are some that are starting to pretty much give their last performances, their swan songs, per se, with the Uruguay national team.
Uruguay taking on Peru and Venezuela taking on Chile. That middle pack, as you call it, Juan, really all in some big decisive games in this order. How is it going to look going into next Monday, do you think? Who's going to have the edge in these two ties?
Well, Uruguay right now, they feel the pressure. I mean, if U.S. fans are talking about, oh my God, you know, how we're being treated in Costa Rica, well, Uruguay's bus got pelted with eggs when they got from the airport to the hotel. And yesterday, on the way to a press conference, it was pelted with rocks. I mean, they've been doing whatever they can. I mean, Uruguay in Lima right now are staying in hotel rooms with reinforced windows so they don't hear the fireworks going off right in front of their windows, the music that's blaring, all that kind of stuff. That shouldn't bother them. Peru is another team that we need to be watching out for, a team that's highly explosive, but yet throughout past 32 years, way underachieving, and Sergio Marquez is very well aware of that. Venezuela, you know what, that's a team I have a big question mark about, at least this weekend, because going into Monday and Tuesday, we'll see how they are health-wise. 20 players, supposedly, according to Coach Cesar Farias, well, they all suffered a bit of a stomach complication after eating some food before leaving for Chile. So we got to see how they're looking as far as concerned. They will look rather strong defensively. Of course, having Jose Salomon Rondon up top, he's going to be a major problem for Chile. Meanwhile, Chile will be missing Jose Rojas from Ude Chile, who had to leave the Chilean concentration because of a doping that he was positive over. It was over a glucocorticoid because of some back problems he was suffering. Of course, the glucocorticoid was being used for his back problem just to relieve the pain and the inflammation, but yet he came out positive. So in the best interest of the national team, they removed him. And we'll see how that changes a little bit. But then you're going to see Edu Vargas up top alongside Alexis Sanchez, very explosive Chile side. Anything goes on that one, especially with the rallying cry that Venezuela have after having beaten them before in Santiago back in 2001. So, yeah, that's going to be all these matches are just so even right now that you don't know what's going to happen. And the teams are well aware of that, that any point that they slip up with or they end up not obtaining could end up nipping them in the bud in the end.
Now, I've left arguably the best one till last one because
What are you talking about, the best one? The only one that matters.
The only one that matters, according to Wen. Colombia meeting Ecuador. This is set to be a real treat of football today. For Colombia, really, You can talk about the number of goals they've scored, fantastic in this tournament, but defensively have looked rock solid throughout this qualification process at the moment. Ecuador, though, have caused plenty of problems for plenty of people. And really, to me, this is one of the best Ecuador sides that we've seen in a very, very long time. Do Ecuador have enough on the road in Colombia to be able to pull off a win and put themselves above Colombia in second place behind Argentina?
They have it, but here's one trend that I've been putting it out there on Twitter and everywhere else. Ecuador have not lost at home and have not won on the road in 4 years. They have not been able to win or earn 3 points on the road in this World Cup qualifying phase. They have not been able to do it. Away from Quito, remember, Quito's over 2,000 feet above sea level, or 2,000 meters above sea level, should I say. It's very complicated for them when they have to go elsewhere. And Barranquilla, today, it'll be around 96 degrees. At least that's what I saw in the reports. There's going to be some showers as well. So it's a very hot, humid environment that shouldn't be a major difference for them. But it's also a very emotional match as well. It's the first official competitive match that they're going to have without Chucho Benitez, and which today they're going to have a moment of silence prior to that match to honor Chucho Benitez as well. And we got to see how this Ecuadorian says. There's a lot of rumors going around that Reynaldo Rueda is pretty much going to be using a false nine, as Felipe Caicedo is not available, so it'll end up being Jofre Guerrón, who's really started to evolve into a different player, a more stable player ever since, you know, he was South American Player of the Year back in 2008. Playing over in China right now, you see him in a different role, but he's still a midfielder. So essentially, Ecuador could be playing without a forward, an out-and-out number nine up top against Colombia. So that can really offer you a lot of problems, especially when you have an Antonio Valencia from Manchester United, and you also have a Jefferson Montero out wide. They really can cause some problems. Add to that the fact that Colombia is also going to be missing out with both Cristian Zapata and Mario Yepes in the middle. So you're going to have Amaranto Perez. And I say that because every time you see Perea in a Colombia jersey, or you just ask Cruz Azul fans, that's reason to worry. he's a great player. You know, he's a very, but he's just always bound to something happening back there. That's just what makes you cringe, you know, about Luis Amaranto Perea at this stage of his career.
Three or four games left. With the table looking now just for only one, is this how it's going to look at the end of this qualifying process, do you think, or are there really going to be some major changes?
There should be major changes because everything's so up in the air right now that you don't even know where the middle point is right now as far as looking at fourth and fifth place. You don't know. I mean, Chile is the one that looks the most solid. A win, of course, against Venezuela is going to complicate Venezuela. So everything pretty much surrounds itself. Everything ends up playing out the way it will based on today. I mean, if teams win or lose, if teams end up only getting 1 point, give you an example. Colombia with a win today pretty much assures themselves of fifth place. They can do no worse than fifth place today. Of course, and now they have, you know, three matches to be able to earn at least a point. I mean, that seems very doable, especially knowing that they close out with Paraguay, a team that they've been successful at in that final round, although it hasn't translated into success in getting into the World Cup. In the case of Ecuador, they're right behind, 21 points, maybe 3-4 more points and they're in. Okay, that's very doable, especially having a couple of matches that they're going to be playing in Quito. Chile, well, okay, you start looking at them, they're also in the same position. So, okay, 5 points in four matches, I think that's doable on their behalf. Now it's the others. You know, it ends up going down to goal differential. It ends up being a point here, a point there. So, I mean, you're really looking at three teams. You're looking at Venezuela, you're looking at Uruguay, and you're looking at Peru. What's going to happen between those teams? No one knows. I mean, that's just the beauty of CONMEBOL World Cup qualifiers, that they, you know, anything can happen at any moment. I mean, and people are well aware of that. Teams are well aware of that. And you go in pretty much already a nervous wreck to begin with.
isn't it great when Brazil aren't there and the script is even changed even more? Juan, it's an absolute pleasure to have been joined by you today here on World Football Daily. Quickly tell us what's coming up on the Mad About Football show as well this week.
Well, we've been on hiatus for a little bit, as you know, I've been doing some personal things that, you know, take up some time. George has been absolutely busy over at Gold TV calling games left and right. I think we call it George TV at this point. and Mike also, you know, doing some things at his new job that really has taken up a great bit of time. On my end, we're waiting, you know, a couple interviews that we'll be doing here and there. Of course, our monthly segment with Pisa over at Soccer Pro, always talking about the latest and unbelievable that, you know, and this is something that was told me, that Gareth Bale's jersey is just selling like hotcakes over Neymar, over any other jersey right now. And that's going to be interesting to see. But, you know, we have a segment where we talk about that. I have a couple of interviews. Maybe I'll even have Rolo Zapata on to talk about the possibility of him going to Sunshine Stars.
Well, that would be something if you could pull that one off, Juan, I tell you. Look, we've...
Oh, and by the way, this week I'll be up in Boston for the Brazil-Portugal match.
Oh, cheers. Thanks for that, Juan. Yeah. Rather than just being completely jealous of the lifestyle that you live anyway,
no, football commentary
and whatnot.
I'm going to be jealous of your lifestyle in a couple of weeks.
Hey, we'll see, man. I'm not in Montevideo just yet, but we will.
No. Yeah, man. Hey, you know what, man? Just Rosetta Stone, man.
Yeah.
Trust me. And you know what? Here's the thing, and I'll tell you this, just straight out honest. And it's a little study I've been doing, you know, after talking to guys like Ralph Hanover in Paraguay, Tom Marshall. You know what helps you learn a language?
Yeah.
Girl, the females. They'll have you learn the language like that. You'll become fluent. I mean, you'll become fluent if you find a girl. Don't worry about it.
I'm already learning one.
In 2 weeks, you'll be fluent.
I
guarantee you that.
I'll know what I need to go to a bar anyway and have a good time, mate. I'm sure.
Oh, that's a little bit more than I need to know, but go ahead and knock yourself out, man.
Oh, I will, don't you worry. Juan, a pleasure to have you on the show, man, as always. We always enjoy getting you on, mate. And we will catch up again with you very shortly on a little bit more of South American and, of course, on Central American as well. Actually, just quickly, I did want to ask you this. Mexico, going into the World Cup qualifiers this weekend and the amount of pressure that's under this Mexico side, is it going to get to them? Is it going to get kind of to a breaking point for them where it all becomes a little bit too much taking on Honduras?
If they don't win today, yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are people saying if Mexico doesn't win today, who knows if Chepo will fly to Columbus? I mean, that's the pressure that he's on right now. It's not just the team and how it's performing. It's also the attitude some of the players have. Memo Ochoa saying, oh, well, if I'm not going to start, I don't want to be called up. The constant issues that Chepo's had with Carlos Vela. I mean, how can you not have one of the best, arguably the best players in Mexican players right now not playing for the national team? I mean, what he's been able to do over at Real Sociedad is incredible. And still, you know, it's personal. I don't know if it's personal vendettas, but it's a rivalry between these two individuals that, you know, is really kind of hindering. And we'll see. What I've told people is let's wait to see what the score is in the 20th minute. If in the 20th minute it's still scoreless, you're going to start hearing a lot of the 100,000+ people over at Azteca really getting on the Mexican national team.
I tell you what, I would not like to be on that Mexican bench if those boos start coming, that's for sure. Juan, take care, man. Enjoy the World Cup qualification rounds this weekend, and we'll catch up very shortly with you on World Football Daily, mate.
Cool, man. All right, talk to you later.
Take care, brother. Big thanks there to the big man, Juan Arango, taking us through South American World Cup qualification. It's been a while since we delved into Conan Ball, a little bit South American qualification. Argentina able to book their place in Brazil 2014 this weekend. And wouldn't it be one hell of an upset if Argentina went and won the World Cup in Brazil? There was a mighty upset, of course, when Uruguay won it in Brazil. If Argentina were to do it in this modern era, could feasibly cause some sort of international incident.